contracted sepsis, and that was just through eczema in his ankle. And because of his condition, sepsis ravaged his body, and he was in intensive care. His liver had packed up, kidneys packed up. And
hello, and welcome to Unexpected Turns with myself, Anne Dibben.
And me, Julie Tattersall.
How do you cope when your body fails you? Last week, we spoke to my nephew, Christopher Allenby, whose heart simply stopped working multiple times. I know what that was like as an aunt. But how is it as a parent when your son's body goes into failure? Liver, lungs, heart. How do you cope? How do you move forward? And how does that affect you as a family? Listen on to hear Mark's story.
Welcome, Mark. We're very delighted that you're here today with us at Wessex Heartbeat House, joining us on our podcast. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be here.
Good. Now, you had a very interesting journey to be at this point at Heartbeat House. Can you tell us a little bit about how you came to unexpectedly be the CEO at Heartbeat House? What's led you to be here?
Thank you, Anne. I am a hotelier by trade, and I've been running hotels for nearly 25 years, actually. And throughout my time running hotels, we've had a cardiac backstory as a family. Our son, Alexander, was born, went breathless and blue after 5 days, and was diagnosed with a very serious heart condition. And between then and now, he's 24 years of age, he's undergone 4 bouts of major open heart surgery.
And so when was the first one of those?
So the first one was when he was 14 months. He then had one when he was 8, which was a life-changing operation, a one and a half ventricular repair. Basically, one of his ventricles wasn't working properly, and this enabled that to happen. He also had 2 holes in his heart, and those holes were closed. But he also got heart block in his operation, therefore needing a pacemaker. So he's had a pacemaker put in at age 8, which he still has now. He then had an operation when he was 17, and then unexpectedly, the year before lockdown, 2019, he contracted sepsis. And that was just through eczema in his ankle, and because of his condition, sepsis ravaged his body. He was in intensive care. His liver had packed up, kidneys packed up, and literally been kept alive with antibiotics. But unfortunately, the infection had got into his heart chambers, which then needed another 12 hours of major open heart replumbing, if you like. And then in recovery, he had a stroke. So poor chap, he really has been through it. But he's 24 now. As I said, he has a pacemaker, but he plays cricket and Hampshire League cricket as well, so to a good standard. He's a good golfer and just has graduated as a physio at Winchester University, got a 2-1, and is now practicing in New Milton in a private practice. So this backstory enabled us to get quite close to Wessex Heartbeat as a charity. And being a hotelier, I have held an event in a hotel each year to raise money for the charity. And different projects that the charity has been funding, we've sort of, I guess, always had a certain amount that we needed to raise for a particular event. So I think about 150,000 over over nearly 20 years.
You and your hotel have raised that.
Yeah, and with the family as well. So and that has helped fund, amongst other things, the Young Adults Cardiac Ward, YACU, which Alex was an ambassador for when it was opened by Her Majesty now the Duchess of Edinburgh, Sophie, formerly Countess of Wessex. So we've always been very close to the charity, and with the backstory, and my sort of hotel career naturally came to an end because I was done with running hotels. It was something I enjoyed greatly, but sort of thought I'd like to do something else. And I got a call back end of last year after my last event to say there was an understanding that John Munro, my predecessor, might be moving on, and would I be interested in taking over the reins? So,
wow, just like that.
Just like that. So I had a meeting with Nigel, the chair of Board of Trustees. Bit of a left field appointment, I think, for the board, because often I think charities go for CEOs that have done or worked in other charities.
Yes.
But I suppose with the backstory and the fundraising, and I know an awful lot of people over the road at the Wessex Cardiac Unit in the hospital. Mm. And even in the last few weeks and months, I've been having meetings with those said cardiologists, surgeons, nurses. And I've known a number of them for over 20 years through being a parent of a congenital heart child. So it feels right for me. I've done 6 months and it's absolutely flown by. And I can't tell you, Anne, how much fulfillment I've had already in that 6 months. And I can see myself doing this for many years to come, and hopefully evolving the charity. It didn't need revolutionising. It's always been, in its 30 years, a very well-run, well-respected charity. Yes. And I guess it's sort of taking it into the next generation, being mindful of surviving or being around in 30 years' time, with maybe a different outlook to the way we do things. But that's not, as I said, revolutionising things. It's just evolving with the times, I guess. So that's a very long-winded way of answering your question.
It is, but you've got everything in there, because it is very unusual to have a CEO like you with a very personal perspective, mm-hmm. and a really good background in hoteling, mm. but absolutely zero background in charity. So it is completely fresh perspective.
Sure. Well, and I guess being a fundraiser, and we've been fundraisers for 20 years, I've always had an understanding as to how to make it a profitable event. I think if you talk to a lot of people and you ask them how much they've raised for an event, they'll tell you a top line revenue figure. Well, you have to take out your costs, your entertainment, and other factors, because it's the profit figure that's the important amount that we can then expend against in relation to different projects that, you know, we're liaising with the unit across the road. So it's the profit that's important. And I think with running hotels, it was all about managing profit and loss accounts. So having that understanding of I guess, sort of mini financial acumen is important when running a charity, because it's about expending other people's money, and that's a very sensitive and important aspect of the whole process.
Can I take you back a bit? You had a son who was needing a lot of help and support. Did you have other children as well?
Yes, we have Holly, who's now 28. Alex is 24. And I think there was a moment during the life-changing operation when Alex was eight.
Yeah.
Holly was 11 at the time. And I remember quite vividly now, we had left her with my parents in Chandler's Ford. So we don't live a million miles away from the hospital, which was always a godsend, in particularly in those early periods of Alex's illness. But we always said to Holly, one of us would come home and be with her, even if Alex was in hospital. But on this particular occasion, after this life-changing operation, surgeon had asked us both to be very close to intensive care, pediatric intensive care, PICU, because there was a lot of risk in that particular operation. He'd effectively done four operations in one. And he was, you know, touch and go at one point. So we both had to be very, very close to, in inverted commas, the action. And I remember going back home with my wife, Susie, and saying to Holly, really sorry, Holes, but we both need to be in the hospital for the next couple of days, so we're going to leave you with Grandma and Grandpa. And I remember her running upstairs, going into our bedroom, and curling up in a little ball and just crying her eyes out. Because, and I did, and I've sort of learnt more over time talking to Holly and really understanding what she was going through. But it was the penny drop moment for Susie and I that we had another child who was suffering in a different way, but a little brother was not at home, so she was missing him. A little doggy was down in Bournemouth with her other grandparents. Her mum and dad were effectively isolating her from the action, if you like. And albeit she got on very well with my parents, she probably would have rather have been in our company. So all of this, plus, you know, 11 years of age, a lot of emotion going on as well. That was the moment when we thought we've got another another child here who needs to be supported in a different way. Holly's great and she's fine. And we've talked a lot about those times. And I don't think she's been unduly affected sort of later on in life. But I think if we hadn't identified that at that point, that could have caused a problem with the relationship between Alex and Holly.
And they get on well, do they?
They do get on well. In fact, they've got closer as they've grown older. But we actually now are supporting a cardiac youth worker who's working specifically with the psychological needs for 11 to 25 year olds. And one of the things I have discussed with Becky, who's this lovely lady who's doing this role, and actually who looked after Alex as a play specialist in the infant cardiac ward. So she's someone else I've known for a number of years. But she said a lot of the patients she's working with, these youngsters, do have siblings. And the relationships between the patient and the siblings can sometimes be very, very touchy because of jealousy. Mm. You know, there is a perception maybe amongst some siblings that they're getting less attention than the patient who's been under, you know, care at the hospital and lots of sort of mollycoddling, if you like. And that over a period of time can affect the mind and the relationships of siblings going forward. So it's something we're very aware of as we go into this project. So.
I mean, for myself, I know my children, we've got long QT in my family. That's the heart condition. My nephew and niece have both got it. And my own children, who are very, very close to those two, couldn't understand why, you know, this was happening. And they were, I can remember my son Peter saying, he felt impotent, you know, he felt impotent. He thought, I can't do anything. What can I do to solve this? And he felt very responsible because he'd always been like the leader of that little gang. And that was as a cousin.
Yeah, sure.
How you must feel as a sibling.
And I think in talking to Holly, certainly as recently as a couple of months ago, she said it wasn't so much the jealousy, it was more she wanted to be part of it. Yeah. The FOMO, the fear of missing out. And that in some ways was quite reassuring, that it wasn't a jealousy thing.
Yeah.
But actually, thereafter, when Alex had operations or had that surgical attention, we were always very mindful of making sure, you know, I took Holly out for a little meal and or took her to the pictures and just made her feel involved and wanted, because, you know, there's that sort of that isolation factor as well.
Yeah.
And you know, my parents prefer Alex to me, and that was never ever the case. I mean, they're very different, and we love them both in just the same way. So, but yes, it's she's now an HR. She's an HR manager and done very well for herself.
Do you think that has affected, she's working now in human resources, do you think all the relationships that she had with your family, your son, do you think that led her in that direction?
Quite possibly. I mean, she's always been a very gregarious person. She's always been an actress. She does a lot of amateur dramatics. She's a singer, a dancer. She loves being on stage. And I sometimes look deeper into that that's Holly saying, look at me, don't forget about me, sort of thing. She'll say that's not the case, she just loves being on stage. But you know, these things that you experience in your early years, you can take into your later life. But she's pretty rounded, and actually she has a huge level of emotional intelligence and empathy. Partly I think that's inbred in her, but I think she's done a lot of learning through what she has maybe experienced through Alex's journey.
And how does he feel about her? How does Alex feel? You were saying a little bit about Holly wants to be involved.
Alex is, again, if you look at their personalities, Holly is probably more like me. I'm quite a sort of gregarious individual by the nature.
Be in hotelier.
Exactly. My wife is also a hotelier, was a hotelier. We met in hotels, actually. But a very much quieter, less gregarious, for want of a better word, but still very social. So Alex is a bit more like her, a bit more reserved. So he will not openly talk about what he's been through. He's not yet ready to share that. I think when he's, 24 is still a young adult.
It is, definitely.
And it's interesting, you know, we all talk about you become an adult when you're 18. Well, physically you might, but mentally you're probably not properly an adult till your late 20s, maybe early 30s. And I think at that point, he'll probably be in a better position to talk about what he's been through to help other youngsters through maybe giving them a little bit of hope, particularly where, you know, a lot of these youngsters, and again, I refer back to Becky and her cardiac youth worker role, up to 11, the anxiety of cardiac care is probably more felt by the parents than the youngsters. So the youngsters aren't really aware of what's going on. They suddenly come to 11, 12, 13, and they go, oh, well, what is that scar that I've got? You know, what's caused that? And these drain wounds. And as they become more aware of what they've been through, that's when the anxiety levels increase. And then they're going into adolescence. And then they're starting relationships, so they become more body aware. Then they need to focus on their education. And if their peer group is a negative peer group that's getting them into bad things, and as they grow older, then tattoos and piercings on every level, a cardiac patient shouldn't be doing those things for risk of infection. So then there's that feeling of isolation. Well, they're all allowed to do it, but I'm not. And then it's then transitioning into sort of young adulthood and hopefully into career. Now, Alex has been very lucky because he's had that invested family. Obviously, it all starts with the family. Then a very, very invested group of probably 12 very close friends who really understand what he's had to go through and have helped him through it. There's never been any thought of he's been isolated because of his condition. They've always involved him in stuff. And then, you know, having a good education, then further education at university, and then into a great career. So you've got him at one end of the scale, but then on the other end of the scale, you've got some maybe cardiac patients that have experienced COVID isolation, for example. Yeah. Maybe have single parent families. I met a young cardiac patient that's been brought up by his grandparents because the parents are in denial as to the heart condition. So all these factors can then make it very, very difficult as you go through the adolescent years into adulthood. And sadly, some of those experiences can stay with you for life and can affect you for the rest of your life. Yeah. So
what about you as parents? I'm going back to my own family situation, and my sister in particular, she almost blamed herself for her children having this condition, and that had a very big impact on her. How did it affect you and your wife, or did that not?
No, I don't think it did. I think we've always been cup half full people, so we've always seen the optimistic side of everything that Alex has gone through. You may remember that famous medical program, Your Life in Their Hands.
Yeah.
And I think that very first operation, when he was 6 days old, we just have to put our trust in those experts. And although, and I remember quite specifically when I'd follow this blue light ambulance into Southampton General Hospital, as it was at the time, from Winchester, Susie was in the back of the ambulance with my father and Alex, and I was probably a little bit of ignorance was bliss.
Yeah.
But when we got to the hospital and he was given 21% chance of living by the cardiologist, why not 20 and 25? It was specifically 21.
Yeah.
We sort of looked at each other and thought, yeah, this is pretty serious then. But then in a very...
Did you not go into shock being told that? You just thought it's serious? Like, that is...
Well, me personally, I didn't. And I'll tell you for why. Quite bizarrely, I was the hotel manager at Botley Park at the time. And the previous weekend, there'd been a wedding. And a couple of people had become ill as a result of the food at the wedding. So all that was on my mind was this alleged food poisoning outbreak that had sort of gone through the sort of wedding guests. It turns out to be an airborne infection that had affected the food. But that was all I was thinking about. So
do you think you were in denial, though? Were you thinking about that because that was something you could deal with and not focus on the fact that you were so...
I don't know. I don't know, because all I remember is that is what happened at the time. And then being told these facts and then being given the consent form for this first operation. And yes, on the consent form is the worst case scenario. Yeah. So that goes through your mind. But then you think, well, we as a couple can't do anything more to affect this situation. Shocking as it, and yeah, there probably was an element of shock. But you just have to let him get on with it. But that was a 7-8 hour operation, and then the initial open heart, the 14-month-old operation, that's another 10 hours. So I think each time you do it, it's never any better, but because you've had experience and he's made it through that operation, and people are telling you he's in a centre of excellence for cardiac care, not just across the south, but in the UK.
Yeah.
And
it's internationally renowned.
Yes, absolutely. And we were only 12 minutes away. So being so close, it sort of makes me understand how important this house is at Heartbeat House, because we're looking after people from Devon and Cornwall, from Oxford, from Channel Islands. Well, we were 12 minutes away, and that was invaluable in terms of accessibility to Alex. It meant we could actually go home and
really,
yeah, absolutely. And we had a lot of family support as well, whether that's my parents or Susie's parents. So I think we just became quite objective about it, rather than thinking, oh, it's Alex and what could happen. You get your mind to a point where you think, well, he got through last time. There's no reason why he can't get through this time. We were both positive individuals. Yes, you have your moments, and goodness me, there was worry and anxiety like you wouldn't believe it. And when I had a good day, Susie was there to comfort me, and vice versa. So we've just been married 30 years actually, and sometimes these experiences can have an impact on a relationship that can be very negative and push a couple apart. Actually made us probably even stronger as a couple, and as a four, you know, with Holly and Alex, we're as strong as you can get, and they've both got respected partners that they've been with for a number of years, so we have a lot of fun together. We do a lot of touching wood, because life has been impacted by Alex.
Yeah.
But if Alex has to have another operation, or we've had to be with Alex, it's been all of us, and we're all in it together. We just drop everything and support him, and that's the way we've dealt with it. And touch wood, he will continue to progress. We'll continue to watch risks of infection, because that's probably the thing that would ultimately cause him to be back in the unit again. But he has regular checkups, and he'll know if he goes breathless or his fingernails go blue or he just doesn't feel right in himself. But he's a very active, normal human being, but incredibly strong there. Although often sometimes we don't know what's going on in there.
No.
I've got a very much a sort of traditional sporty father-son relationship. You know, we play cricket together, which is very special. When you see what he's been through, and even as recently as last Saturday, you know, he gets 25 not out and hits a six off the last ball of the innings.
Wow.
He then gets a really important wicket to break a partnership. And you just think, I know what he's been through to get to that point.
Yeah.
But he just lives life as probably as normally as you could possibly live life in relation to what he's been through. And what he's been through, goodness me, most human beings wouldn't go through a quarter of what he's had to go through. But his motto in life is two words: no regrets.
Perfect.
Mm.
That is a perfect motto to have.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I think that's a perfect note to almost end on. Mm. You talked a lot about how strong you are as a family and how positive you all clearly are. What advice would you give to other people facing similar difficult situations?
Trust the experts, and if I was talking specifically to people who were under treatment at Southampton, they are so good, and I'm not just talking about the surgeons, I'm talking about the cardiologists as well, the nurses. They're a big team, and there's a reason why they're called the Wessex Cardiac Unit, because they form a team that's made up of over 1,000 people, actually, which makes it one of the largest units in the country. So absolutely trust the experts. I think also having a strong family network and support, and not just the couple and the kids and the siblings, but you know, aunts and uncles, grandparents, cousins, they all feel it, so they all should be part of that as well. And you know, we've been very lucky because we both, Susie and I, have wider family networks that have been very helpful and supportive. And I think also our respective employers have been hugely supportive. And I think because I've had employers that have been supportive, they've also known that the fundraising I've been doing has been something very close, excuse the pun, close to my heart. So whether that's people physically supporting the event or friends, hotel colleagues providing vouchers for auctions and that sort of thing, having that support has been great. But to know actually that I've done a career and been able to go into something else that perceptibly is very different, but there is synergy. There's a lot of synergy.
I can imagine that.
Because you both in hospitality and in the charity sector, you're caring for people and looking after people. So that whole care philosophy is relevant throughout, whether that's looking after relatives of patients, but also looking after a team. And it's a very small team here.
It is a small team.
But they're a very special small team because if you look at the number of years that the eight of us have worked in this charity, and I'm only 6 months, but there's probably, T1, Tina 1, she's done 23 years, Tina 2, 5, Jenny 8, Nicola 8. I mean, it's fantastic, and it shows you how powerful this charity is. And in its 30th year, which is very special.
It is very special.
And our celebrations culminate at the Mayflower, actually, September the 17th. Musicals from the Heart, where we've got some of the very best West End stars, some of them from the local area and Broadway, performing some of the popular musicals that everyone likes to hear. We'll hopefully pack out the Mayflower, and we hopefully have a very, very special guest joining us as well, which I'm afraid I'm not at liberty to tell anybody, including my wife, but hopefully once we have that confirmed or otherwise, we can share that, and it will raise the profile of the event and the charity to another level.
It is a very special charity. I know people go on about every charity being special. I only support two charities, this one and Forza, which is a charity based in Lymington, personally. And this one's very special because it was in its infancy when my nephew and niece were diagnosed. Mm-hmm. And the charity and the surgeons were amazing at that time, and they wrote to Italy because nobody knew anything about the condition that my nephew and niece and brother-in-law had. And they wrote all over the world to get support. And so it's really personal. And I think, you know, not just that team of 1,000, but you've got the people from the charity supporting as well. So I personally am very grateful. And obviously, like I said, my co-host, she had a heart attack suddenly. And so we are all very grateful to you and the whole team at Southampton. And the good thing about your charity is it works, as you say, so closely with the team across the road. So a bit of a lag from me, so sorry about that.
No, that whole community thing is so important. And actually, I mentioned it earlier about the house and how we're looking after relatives of patients that are coming from quite far afield. 25% are coming from Dorset. So the Dorset community is a really important community for us. Guernsey is 25%. So we're pushing farther and wider, and there's a reason why we've gone from Wessex Heartbeat to Heartbeat supporting Wessex and beyond, because the sort of profile of the charity is pushing to different parts of the country. We had someone from Edinburgh the other day that came and stayed. We've had Oxford, we've had Leicester, Birmingham, Devon, Cornwall, Yeovil, Chichester. So you know, the idea is to have ambassadorial presence in all of these areas that can help spread the word about the charity, because, you know, we are supporting their communities, and hashtag everyone has a heart.
We do. We do. Well, thank you very much, Mark.
It's a pleasure.
It's been fascinating talking to you. And I know that Alex will continue to go on and do great things and actually involved in the health service. Isn't
sure.
that a fascinating?
Well, he's actually gone into...
You're going to tell me he's in private.
Yes, he's in private. And interestingly, the natural default for a physio graduate is to spend 3 years in the health service. And he said, well, I've been in hospital most of my life, which was a bit of an exaggeration, a lot of his life. And he did work in eight hospitals in the practical area of the training in his course. So he said to us, I am going to work in a private practice. And Susie and I said to him, good luck, because it's rare that you're straight from university get into a private practice. Well, he found a private practice in New Milton. It's a new practice run by a really young, ambitious guy who wanted someone that was a graduate that he could put on a mentorship scheme and that had a sort of a broader outlook based on his experience as a patient, and I guess, and the empathy of being on the other side of physio. And he had a three-stage interview, which was a bit of a grilling, but I'm pleased he had it. And he did it on his own, and he got the job. And he's been there a year now, and absolutely loves it. So he's sort of connected to the health service, but it is a private practice, and he's loving every minute of it. So.
Well, thank you. Well, when he's ready to talk, we would obviously love to talk to him.
Sure.
But thank you very much.
Absolute pleasure.
Pleasure talking to you.
Likewise.
Thank you.
Listening to Mark brought back so many memories. As a parent, it is so hard to watch your child suffer. And as Mark said, the impact on the whole family, cousins, aunts, uncles, as well as his son's older sister, is huge. But as Mark says, trust the experts and never ever give up. So thank you to Mark.
And to our listeners, as always, of Unexpected Turns.
We hope you'll join us again in a couple of weeks' time when we talk to Chloe Evans, who has had a fascinating story, is now living in Dubai and rescuing animals in Africa. How does she do it? Listen in to find out. Till then, bye. If this is all a bit disjointed, apologies, but I'm a little excited still. My son has only just got married, and I've still not calmed down.